This is Talk is Cheap on KPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio. Okay, so this week I've got several stories I did for our newscast from when I was in D.C. during the election. I did several interviews, and I hope you'll keep listening because I also have more stuff from the Eugene Environmental Film Festival. And it's the anniversary of the WTO. I'm hoping to have some stuff on that. I have a little time for some commentary here. And please use your own brain at all times when listening to independent media. Support independent media. So this is pure speculation on my part. Like I say, please research this yourself. So I've always said, when Trump first got elected, I've always said, who better to preside over the collapse of the economy than Trump, since all of his businesses have failed in one way or another. He's the king of failed businesses. And so I think the Dems knew that they know social unrest is coming because they sold out to the corporations long ago when in their defense, they lost funding from labor. Both sides have basically moved toward corporations and sold out labor and the middle class. Dick Cheney is the Forrest Gump of unnecessary wars with the wrong countries, and in my opinion, caused the financial crisis of 2008 with the Iraq War. And but the Democrats, you know, they facilitated, presided over several wars, especially that milieu, the Clinton-Biden milieu section of the Democratic Party, basically looted our treasury with unnecessary wars with the wrong countries instead of using diplomacy that we need and that we can use in the 21st and the 20th century. And so they know that the currency gets devalued when they do that, which causes inflation, because you're spending on money on things that you're just blowing up instead of spending money on, whether you believe in privatizing or public funding of things, you're not spending money on infrastructure and social programs and healthcare. Even corporations would rather pool their money together to get a good price. It's more efficient in healthcare to pool all our money together. So there are certain things, whether you believe in privatization or not, that even most people admit that healthcare is something that should be done by, I mean, of course you can have some competition there to get better healthcare, but it's better to pool all your money together and get better to cut costs. So, what I think is going to happen is also Trump is not going to be able to throw off the military-industrial complex. I'm hoping that I don't know why the military-industrial complex, instead of blowing up our treasury, why don't you send our treasury out into space and we might at least get some knowledge and some technology from it. You know, Velcro was invented by the space program, by the Apollo 11 project. We got Velcro out of that, so why not, if you're going to blow our money on something, why not blow it on the space program instead of wars? So that's all I've got time for. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support your local comedy open mic. HandsOffUhuru.org is asking for support at the sentencing hearing for the Uhuru 3, December 16th. They helped organize the Black People's Conference on November 2nd before Election Day in Washington, D.C., I spoke with keynote speaker, former United States Marine Corps intelligence officer, former United Nations Special Commission weapons inspector, author, and commentator, Scott Ritter.
I don't even know him in advance.
Isn't our policy in Israel and Palestine and Ukraine basically mostly about selling weapons? It's not about winning the war.
Well, I'll say it's not about solving the solution. It's not so about solving the problem. It's not about trying to bring an end to the conflict. I mean, any rational human being would say that if you're going to be involved in something like a conflict, that you should be seeking conflict resolution to bring the conflict to an end. What we're doing here is we are claiming to pick a side, but we're picking a side without a solution. So all we do is perpetuate the cycle of violence, and that means that because our primary means of supporting a side is through the provision of weaponry, it basically begins to look like it's a giant scheme for for enriching the military-industrial complex here in the United States. I'm sure policymakers will say that we're trying to win the war, trying our side to have our side win the war. But the fact of the matter is, we're more than 2 years into a Ukraine conflict that we're losing, and Israel's not winning. All we're doing is sending more weapons, which means more people die. The conflict goes on, and the irony here is that the result we claim that we don't want to have, the other side winning, is exactly what's happening. Hamas is winning, Hezbollah is winning, Iran is winning, Russia is winning. And I guess you could say that American weapons producers are winning, but the people we claim to be supporting aren't.
Hmm. Right, and so this milieu of the Democrats that are funded by corporations, it seems like I either am funding the military-industrial complex, or with globalization I'm funding Amazon and tech corporations and other corporations. It's either one corporation or the other.
It's the same with the Republicans, I would say. I would say with mainstream American politics, the bottom line is special interests are driving the ship, not the genuine desires of the American people. Whether the special interests are defense industry related, pharmaceutical companies, big tech, oil, they seem to be the ones calling the shots on the policies, not the American people. And so, we end up underwriting all this with our tax dollars, but we don't get any benefit from it.
All right, and then you were the weapons inspector for Iraq. Why didn't Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, they're on the intelligence committee. Shouldn't they have investigated the Iraq war?
Well, I mean, I'm sure they're going to claim that they did investigate the Iraq war, but, there are investigations and there are investigations. There are investigations that seek out the truth, and there are investigations that exist from the very beginning for the sole purpose of certifying a preordained conclusion. Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, and others have a narrative that they're trying to support, that Saddam Hussein was evil, that there were weapons of mass destruction, that we needed to go in. And so they're going to fix the findings of their investigation to sustain that, as opposed to doing a genuine investigation into the root causes, because if they did that, they'd find out that Saddam Hussein was a rational actor who could have been dealt with diplomatically, that there were no weapons of mass destruction, Iraq did not pose a threat to anybody.
Well, and I know you're not an economist, but to me that's what put us into the 2008 financial crisis, is we spent all this money on war, unnecessary war with the wrong country.
What I would say is agree with you 100% that I'm not an economist, but note too that I'm not a medical doctor, but I know when I have a fever, and I know when I have a cold. And I know there are things that contribute to good health and things that don't contribute to good health. And I would say that the health of the American economy is not promoted when we are giving money away to causes like war and stuff, instead of taking care of the issues at home that would benefit from that money.
All right, so last question, what's the solution? And what I'm asking other people is, I'm from Oregon, where we have Ron Wyden, is why can't we just throw out the defense contractors out of each state and tell them we want that money for social programs that you're spending on the war? Can't we stop all these defense contractors? We pass a military budget in a week, but we can't
the
pass
best
a
way
homeless
to,
plan.
Yeah, the best way to stop defense contractors is to stop funding them. But
how do we do that?
Elect better representatives. But the problem is, in order to get elected nowadays, you have to have a lot of money, and that money comes from special interests, and one of the main special interests are the defense industries, the pharmaceuticals. It's all interrelated. If you're somebody who's generally going to shake up the system will do whatever it takes to make sure that you don't get elected, and if you do get elected, they're going to make it hard for you to stay in office, especially if you're a congressional representative with a two-year electoral cycle. The moment you win election, you're going to have to start raising funds to defend yourself in a primary that the other side is going to be pouring money into. It's impossible right now. If you want to solve the big problems that face this country, you have to take money out of American elections. You have to level the playing field so that it becomes a battle of ideas, not about a battle who has the deepest pockets.
Yeah, what about free media time? Let's, instead of spending all that time on sports, let's just get free media.
I think that's part of it. If you're going to take money out of it, one of the things that money brings is the ability to buy advertising and things of that nature. I think we level the playing field by having laws that provide equal time for all candidates so that the people get to decide who better articulates policies and things of that nature.
Well, but Obama famously took small funding from everybody, didn't he? He didn't take large.
Obama took large money. Everybody takes large money. They hide it. They, it may not seem, but they come up with the whole thing about political action committees and stuff. There's money, and then there's money. The money that gets counted and the money that doesn't get counted. The money that doesn't get counted is a huge amount of money, and we have to learn to control that as well.
All right, thanks for your time and your great work.
Okay, thank you very much.
To support the Uhuru 3 and the Black People's Movement, go to handsoffuhuru.org. HandsOffUhuru.org is asking for support at the sentencing hearing for the Uhuru 3, December 16th. They helped organize the Black People's March on November 3rd before Election Day in Washington, D.C. At the rally before the march, I spoke with Jacqueline Lukeman, Vice Chair of the Coordinating Committee for Black Alliance for Peace, about NATO exploitation and the United States Africa Command, or AFRICOM. In 2007, the White House announced that Africa Command will strengthen our security cooperation with Africa and create new opportunities to bolster the capabilities of our partners in Africa. Africa Command will enhance our efforts to bring peace and security to the people of Africa and promote our common goals of development, health, education, democracy, and economic growth in Africa. General Carter F. Hamm, who served as the second commander of Africa Command, led Operation Odyssey Dawn, the initial United States role in the 2011 military intervention in Libya. He said in a 2012 address at Brown University that U.S. strategy for sub-Saharan Africa is to strengthen democratic institutions and boost broad-based economic growth. In 2012, AFRICOM headquarters' fiscal budget was $276 million.
You have a sign that says U.S. and NATO out of Africa. Countries are required to give money to NATO, and that money basically goes to weapons. Why are you against NATO?
Because NATO was founded as a means to at first keep Russia in check, but then to destroy Russia after World War II, even though it was the Soviet Red Army that actually defeated the Nazi Empire. But NATO, under the direction of the United States, really just wanted to destroy what became Russia, but at first was the Soviet Union. And NATO exists to be the international bullies, the international thugs for the U.S. The NATO deploys troops wherever the U.S. tells them to deploy troops. That's why NATO troops and weapons are all along the border of Russia and former Warsaw Pact countries to threaten them. So this is what NATO does. This is what the U.S. government does with NATO. NATO is not a peacekeeping force. NATO is the international gang of thugs for the United States.
Right, and so we were at peace with Russia in the 90s after Glasnost.
Peace.
It wasn't actually a
genuine peace. It was a facade of peace that still was a thin cover of aggression toward Russia. Because while U.S. presidents like Bill Clinton was telling a Russian president, Gorbachev, that look, we're at peace with you, NATO was still putting weapons and troops in Warsaw Pact and former Warsaw Pact countries on the borders of Russia, even after U.S. presidents and advisors told many Russian presidents NATO will not expand further east. It was all a lie. They kept expanding NATO further east, further toward the borders of Russia, even as they were telling Russian presidents they weren't going to do it.
But that's my point. If anything, we should have abolished NATO at that point because made Russia our friends
Absolutely.
At that point.
Yeah. Putin came to power because the United States government interfered in the elections in Russia in 1996 because the Russians were about to elect a communist as president, and the United States government under Bill Clinton would not let that happen. Imagine that. The United States president saying, we're not going to let the people in another country choose the leader they want. This is what the U.S. government has always done for decades. So what President Bill Clinton did, because he did not want Boris Yeltsin to lose, even though the Russian people hated Boris Yeltsin, which is why he was about to lose to a communist, Bill Clinton sent a team to Russia to manage the campaign of Boris Yeltsin and did American-style propaganda, a lot of lying, a lot of misdirection, and somehow Boris Yeltsin barely ekes out another win. And he was a disaster. So he couldn't even finish out his full term. He had to step down. And when he stepped down, who did he choose to finish his term? Vladimir Putin. So if the United States had not interfered in Russia's elections in 1996 and helped someone that the Russian people did not want win the election, then we wouldn't have, or the United States government wouldn't have, Vladimir Putin as a problem. They helped create Vladimir Putin. But on the other hand,
And the reason we put Yeltsin in there is for resource extraction, isn't that right, for Russian oil?
It is a violation of the right to self-determination of other people. So whatever reasons the United States government had for doing all these things that they're always accusing other leaders of socialist countries of doing that they hate, that they also want to destroy, the reasons are illegitimate. NATO is an illegitimate, white supremacist, imperialist structure that needs to be destroyed. Russia needs to be left alone. So does China, Venezuela, Cuba, and as the sign says, Africa. The United States and its international gang of thugs needs to be abolished so that the rest of the world can live in peace.
So the socialism, though, that they're talking about, what...
That is socialism. Human rights are expressed through governments guaranteeing that their citizens have housing, health care, education, a clean environment for people to live and thrive in. These are supposed to be guaranteed by governments because they are human rights. They should not be things that are commodified. They should not be things that people have to qualify for based on their income. They are things that every human being deserves because we're alive and because we're human beings. So if it is a government's responsibility to take care of the welfare of its citizens, then guaranteeing those human rights are how governments do that. And socialist governments do that. They take the money that they make from selling their resources, and they provide housing for the people that the government either pays for completely or subsidizes. They provide health care that the government pays for, and the people don't have to worry about that they don't have enough money to go to the doctor for. Health care is provided by the government. They provide education that is either paid for from K through 12 completely and equitably everywhere in the country, or some socialist countries pay for a higher education also. And they invite people from other countries to come to their countries and go to college for free. Cuba is an excellent example of that. They have the Elon Medical School where they train their world-famous doctors. And anyone from around the world can attend the Elon Medical School and learn how to be a doctor in the human rights tradition and go around the world and spreading humanity like Cuba has always done. This is what human rights and the guarantee of human rights and the perspective of government power means. And the fact that the United States government, a capitalist imperialist country, that doesn't guarantee anybody's human rights in this country. If you have health care, it's because you just happen to make enough money to afford it. And if you don't make enough money to afford it, then you just get sick and stay sick and in pain until you eventually die. That's the American way. In education, public schools are not equitably funded. Poor neighborhoods don't have the same resources as wealthier neighborhoods because public schools are funded by tax property tax revenue. What about people who live in apartment buildings in big cities? They don't generate property tax revenue. So this is why public schools in poor inner city neighborhoods and in poor rural neighborhoods are under-resourced, understaffed, don't have the same kind of accessories and amenities and even programs that schools in wealthy neighborhoods have because of the property tax revenue. In socialist countries where education is a human right, they don't have this problem. Everybody gets a quality education, regardless of where, how much money their parents make. We should have this here, in the richest country that the planet has probably ever seen. But we have to continually fight for basic things like access to, unrestricted access to the polls. Why is it we're in 2024 and people are still fighting for the right to vote? And then these people are sitting there talking about we're defending democracy. What democracy if everybody doesn't have the right to vote? How do we have a democracy if something that simple does not exist and we are still fighting for that right in this country? And then we're fighting for the right to vote for two liars, for two genocidal parties.
Both sides.
Yeah, both sides. For one of two genocidal policies. There's no such thing as lesser evil. Evil is exactly what it is. And why would you choose any? But this is the situation we are faced with in this country, while we're also faced with a government that is demonizing countries that actually are taking care of their people, and then convincing us that they're the enemy instead of this government that is doing all of this to us and to them.
Right, well, what is NATO causing in Africa? I'm not familiar with this.
The United States and NATO are working together. The U.S. has AFRICOM in Africa, which is the U.S. Africa Command. It's one of 12 Department of Defense commands, where the Department of Defense has carved up the entire world, and they monitor the entire world and space 24/7. What right does the United States government have to surveil everybody else in the world? None, but they do it. And they do it through these military commands. So in Africa, there are hundreds of U.S. military bases, full bases, but there are also what they call lily pad sites that are not full bases. They don't have permanent staff there. They just carry out operations from those sites. They're not specific about what those operations are. So they could be drone operations. They could be anything. We don't know. They don't give that information. And other kinds of sites that they're completely secretive about. So there are hundreds of U.S. military bases across the continent, almost literally splitting it in half from the west to the east coast. And what those bases do, what the U.S. military is doing through AFRICOM, is the pacifying and controlling of the people to facilitate the resource extraction, the continued resource extraction that Africa has suffered from since the Berlin Conference in 1885, when the European powers, the pre-NATO powers that became NATO powers, got together and decided, hey, Africa has a lot of resources, let's take them. Let's divide this continent of people up and take their stuff and oppress the people and force them to mine these resources, keep them impoverished, and we'll take off all the profit. This is still going on the continent of Africa, where 40% of the resources that the world, the entire world, needs come from the continent of Africa. So instead of entering into mutually beneficial agreements with the governments where the resources are that they need, the U.S. government decided to put military bases on the continent and basically bully the people into, you know, forcing them or pacifying them so they can keep stealing their resources. The U.S. and its Western allies, Canada, France, Britain, you know, all of them.
Instead of humanitarian aid.
Yes. What humanitarian aid?
Right.
The U.S. government offers humanitarian aid, and then they might build a school, they might build a clinic, and then as soon as people start complaining, okay, thank you, but you can leave now, then they take the aid. Then they will take the aid. Yeah, so...
So this is for white people, too, though. Everyone, white, all races, this would help. not just African race or whatever this
was. Oh, no. Because
we're
in 18...
We're all victims of this.
Yes, we are all victims of this, but Africa was almost the beginning of the modern era of imperialism, of global imperialism. Because in 1885, the European powers did get together. The imperialist European powers got together and decided, we are all going to colonize Africa. And that's what they did. And through the colonization and the underdevelopment of Africa, we saw the repetition of the colonization of other countries. And that, so the colonization and the underdevelopment of Africa, as Walter Rodney explained in his book, How Europe Underdeveloped Africa, that was like the blueprint for every colonization, resource extraction, people pacifying operation that was carried out by the European powers since then. So the liberation of Africa and the destruction of imperialism and neocolonialism in Africa is the foundational linchpin to the destruction of imperialism and colonization around the world.
To support Black Alliance for Peace, go to blackallianceforpeace.com. To support the Uhuru 3 and the Black People's Movement, go to handsoffuhuru.org. For KEPW News, I'm Curtis Blankenship. The Washington, D.C. Party for Socialism and Liberation is a revolutionary socialist political party in the U.S. affiliated with Students for Socialism. They endorsed write-in candidates Claudia De La Cruz for president and Corina Garcia for vice president in order to build a movement that will fight long past election day to replace the dictatorship of the billionaires with a socialist society where the people come first. At their November 5th D.C. election watch party, before the results were in, PSLDC member Benjamin Zinovich was prescient about voter ennui, calling the Democratic Party the graveyard of people's movements.
We've obviously been victims of that media blackout, but the thing that I think they can't avoid is the fact that we've had thousands of volunteers around the country gaining hundreds of thousands of signatures demonstrating that people want to see us on the ballot. And so I think we're seeing the fruits of all that labor suddenly, where people are seeing the name Claudia De La Cruz on the ballot kind of in a shocked way, as you say, that people really are not, really aren't really being able to see what this program is until they are at the ballot box. And so we've, internally, we've seen a lot of interest in the party already, because people are finally seeing a program that is for working people. It's anti-war, it's pro-labor, it's pro-LGBTQ, it doesn't sell immigrants short. So I think that's something that is becoming a rapid realization. And we have something also for them after tonight. We have a political organization that has a presence in more than in all major cities in this country, in more than 100 localities organized. And I think people can find ways to get involved just after Election Day. We're pretty unified. There's been different segments of the Socialist Alternative, or DSA. There's other organizations that have endorsed the campaign. We nominate the candidate as the Party for Socialism and Liberation. And there's been DSA volunteers in Virginia that have helped us get petitions. I think it's just the way of our organization is we have planted the flag of the campaign, and people have chosen at what level they want to interact with it, and we welcome anybody who's willing to participate. Another thing that we've done within the last week, as we sort of finalized our ballot access and sort of we've laid the ground essentially of where we're going to be accessible to the voters, we came with an agreement between Cornel West and Jill Stein to say, if we're not on the ballot in that state, but they are, we encourage our voters to support them, because it's all the same issue. It's all the same struggle to make sure that everybody has a opportunity to vote against this idea of choosing between the lesser of two evils and voting for a greater good.
What are we doing about the war, both war in Gaza and Ukraine?
Well, with the war in Gaza and Ukraine, I mean, we have we've seen growing dissension across, you know, the, I think, broad segments of society. We believe that we have to continue building the rhythm of a mass movement, making sure that it's sustained on either a daily, weekly, monthly basis. And I think that the Palestinian Youth Movement, SJPs, a lot of these Palestinian organizations have really kept a kept Gaza in the minds of people on a daily basis.
Like never before.
Yeah, you can't really leave your house without thinking of Gaza. There's many people who can't wake up without opening their phone to an image of another Israeli-led massacre provided with U.S. bombs. So I think that that's due in part because of the organization that has not just been a flash in the pan or just, you know, something outlandish, but, you know, hard work, maybe sometimes mundane work of just making sure that, you know, the event is held, the rally is, you know, assembled. Because I think as the Vietnam War movement showed, it wasn't, you know, they're not going to cater to the demands the first year. It's a fight for the long haul. And of course, the Palestinians know that well. They've been struggling for more than 70 years against Zionist and Western imperialist powers. I think we're optimistic, and we obviously will stand with them in continuing that fight, but also, as you say, bringing the issues of other U.S. Imperialist crimes, such as the encirclement of China, the mass funding, the funding and the prolonging of the U.S. war, the U.S. NATO proxy war in Ukraine.
Well, so it's organizations like yours that are. That's partly why it's such a close race. Is that it's not going to. We're not going to let Kamala Harris just be a slam dunk, where she has all these war crimes. And she's still funding the war and plans to and continue the war. It's groups like yours that are going to pressure her. That she's not going to be able to get elected to so easily.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we saw, even in the 60s and 70s, we saw the choice between Barry Goldwater and Lyndon Baines Johnson. Lyndon Baines Johnson was running as essentially the peacenik because he didn't want to drop bombs on Southeast Asia, nuclear bombs on Southeast Asia. He didn't want a nuclear confrontation. There was the countdown with the little girl picking daisies. And he won essentially saying that he was the peace candidate, and yet he accelerated the war to an unprecedented volume. And we then saw Nixon, of course, take to power. The Democrats blamed the anti-war movement of that time, but it was because the anti-war movement was so sustained, it was able to create a situation in this country, a crisis, because it really forced Washington to say, are we going to prolong killing poor and oppressed people in Vietnam and Southeast Asia using our own poor and oppressed people at home? That really raised a contradiction because of that sustainability of this movement. And so this is something that we have to do here. And in the face of an expanding war, as the U.S. and Israel are clearly taking every effort to escalate with Iran and other powers of the so-called axis of resistance, as well as heightening, you know, the war language with Russia and China. So that's something that we have to keep a fight against.
The Equal Rights Amendment is right there, ready to be passed.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that's not in her program, but abortion and pro-choice.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, the ERA, the codification of reproductive rights, the codification of LGBTQ protections, these are all things that the Democrats have had decades, since Carter, essentially, to codify and ensure and enshrine. I mean, they've allowed the ERA to expire, and they've allowed these movements that have led the charge to die out. And many would consider the Democratic Party to be called the so-called graveyard of people's movements, because they say, well, we'll take up your cause. Don't worry. We'll, if you just elect us, we'll use whatever issue as essentially a bargaining chip to make sure that they can get the donations, they can get the votes for the next electoral cycle. When we saw the Democrats had control of the Senate, the House, and the presidency, and they let it expire. They let the codification of Roe be overturned, ignored, and then overturned by a right-wing Supreme Court. And yet all of these things have popular consensus, and they could have waged a real mobilization of their base. But at the end of the day, when the PSL was out rallying in front of the Supreme Court, defending Roe and protecting and calling for the codification, we were saying that Biden had the ability to open up every U.S. base and federal site to reproductive health if the state chooses to restrict those rights to women and other reproductive access. And so they failed to do that. There's all these opportunities where the Democrats have the political capital, but never the will. And so we're out here always showing people that none of this is unpopular. None of this is out of the range of a vision of a more democratic society. But it's the fact that the Democrats, at the end of the day, are beholden to a certain class, which is ruled by Wall Street, the Silicon Valley, and the Pentagon. And they benefit off of this constant divide and conquer mentality. And so if certain things are a right, such as a house, education, abortion, human rights, if you're of an oppressed community, they'll use that as a way to say, if you don't reelect us, you'll lose it. And we say, you've had decades to do that, and what have you had to show? You've only had the rollback of these rights. So,
well, they lost labor. The Democrats used to get funding from labor, mm-hmm. and they lost labor partly because of the Republican, and this is why they started taking corporate funding. Mm-hmm. This has been documented. So is there a way for them to get back? I mean,
I think that actually putting more than just empty words around the fight for 15, the PRO Act, all these things that, of course, Biden said that he supports, but just lets die because someone who was ostensibly in his party, such as Joe Manchin or Kyrsten Sinema, were essentially to many people, it seemed like they were intentionally put there to make sure that the Democrats didn't have to do anything. I think that if that was the case, I mean, they would really need to atone for all of the damage that they've done to the lives of working people since NAFTA, since the approval and allowing of mega corporations from selling off and sending all their jobs offshore. I think that they allow this demonization, this division between the climate movement and labor. They always say you can't have either or. They're mutually exclusive. We say that we can make 20 million jobs for America that are union, that are climate centered, and it has to do with the radical transformation of our energy production. And so, again, it's all about political will. And the Democrats who receive fracking money, who receive money from BlackRock that has many investments in fossil fuels and war, they're not interested in that.
What about this word socialism? I went to the Black People's March.
Yeah.
They're talking about that the socialism that we're talking about is what you're saying. Is we want rights for workers and rights for the environment, and we have a right to association too. A union. I got this from George Seldes, was the muckraker's muckraker. That corporations, they all have manufacturers associations and the grocery owners associations. We have a hospital association in Eugene they closed the hospital there, and the shutdown procedure is written by the hospital association. So we have a right to associate, and that's what socialism really is, right?
When someone says, socialism is essentially people are taking away people's private property. Well, what does a mortgage entail? What is a credit card debt entail? What is the fact that you are allowed to get an education or get health care that is, you know, critical to the future and the fate of your life, but then you become an indentured servant through debt. What is that real freedom? We say, you know, nobody should become a debt slave because they want to learn more, because they are having a life-threatening ailment or injury. We believe that, you know, nobody has a right to own someone else's home. And the democracy that we practice at the ballots should expand to tenant organizations, to labor and workplaces. So ultimately, what we say is socialism is the expansion of democracy.
And the sheriff comes and takes you away when you don't pay your mortgage.
Yes.
It's the state that takes you away.
Yeah.
Right. Anything else you want to say?
No, I think if people should understand that, you know, the election is not the end of politics, as we've seen in the last 4 years and 8 years, and that people need to hit the streets with us. They can get find more at pslweb.org if they're interested in joining. Just add a /join, and we'll meet them.
There's a Eugene chapter of the Party for Socialism and Liberation. For more information, go to VoteSocialist2024.com and PSLWeb.org. For KPW News, I'm Curtis Blankenship.
I can see every one of you in here, and that's really horrifying. This sounds like somebody that Faulkner could have invented the character or characters in this song. I don't know if I've mentioned this here before or not, but I visited his grave recently, and it was a big letdown. How many people, well, let's see, there aren't a lot of Jimmy Driftwood fans here. How about Faulkner? Are there any Faulkner people here? So if you've read him, you know that you expect more from him than your average corpse. You really do. You expect something to happen when you go to the grave. And it is just as hard to find as you've been told that it is. Beyond that, the only woman I've known at the top of any set of stairs was about... She had to have been about 65 or so, and I was about 5. And I would go upstairs and look at her stamp collection, suffused with romance. It's a lot better than visiting Faulkner's grave. She lives all alone on a dark and windy street, in a room at the top of the stairs. She smokes cigarettes and stares at the wall, not knowing that my heart lives there. Cool of the night, she takes me inside and helps soothe my troubles and pain. She's warm and she's sweet, her kisses leave me weak. I love it when she touches my face. Talks about the past, the sorrow and regret. She cries about the gray in her hair. I love her so much, but she just won't believe any man alive could ever care. I wish I'd been there when she was a girl, before love had treated her unfair. She'd not be so sad, she'd not live alone in that room at the top of the stairs. In that room at the top of the stairs.
Still.